Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are the Ladies of Groundworks, Inc. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Creek.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. This show broadcasts from the Heritage Radio Network, two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. Today's sponsor is Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market reminds you that every bite has a story. So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates. So today we've retaken our plates with an amazing slice of pizza from Roberta's Pizza. And Ellis and I, we've eaten a lot of pizza here at the radio station, haven't
really
we?
It's really good. It's a good perk.
Yes, it is. So We Dig Plants aims to bring the culture to horticulture. And in so doing, we're discussing today the idea of fences making good neighbors, which we have certainly experienced in our work, Alice, have we?
We've got some stories today.
Yes, and we have the perfect person with us today, a friend and a colleague and master carpenter, Al Terry, who actually builds fences and decks and pergolas and planters and all kinds of other things. Al, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
And it's really nice to have a real live person here in the box, not just over the phone from like somewhere remote. It's nice to have a person here. So Al is in the trenches with us. Sometimes we have a survey and sometimes we don't.
Survey says.
It's really nice when we have a survey, don't we, Al?
It is. It helps. It's an improvement.
Yes, sometimes the architect or the landscape architect takes responsibilities, and sometimes they don't. But the bottom line is that when it comes to inches in New York City, we'd rather be standing in the backyard in the trench with Al rather than anybody else.
That's what they go to school for, those architects, to learn how not to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And then we have to ask that question, do you have a survey? It's actually our first question now when we're doing bids.
Absolutely.
Because we used to assume, Al, that they had a survey, right? You assume that they have a survey.
Yep. You know what happens when you assume.
Now, for those who don't know what a survey is, Al, can you tell our audience what is a survey?
It's a formal way of establishing the perimeter or the parameters of a plot of land, of a property. And in doing so, you establish property rights, the rights of the owner versus the rights of the adjacent owners.
Right. And that's a really clear way of explaining it, because as Alice said, in New York City, inches matter. You know, if you've got acres of land, okay, so your neighbor puts his fence a few inches in, it doesn't matter that much. But when you have, you know, only
20 by 40.
Yeah, that you know matters.
Yep.
Especially if you're building something semi-permanent, like a good fence. You know, you want to make sure that it is on your property line.
Yeah. So Al, before we get into the meat of the fence, so to speak, let's talk about your carpentry experience and how you came to build fences here.
Well, I was originally trained as a boat builder, and so I found myself renovating boats at the boat basin back in the late 80s, and shortly thereafter, I was invited to build essentially a grass hut village on a pier on the Hudson River. Pier 25 was called the Amazon Village. It was the hottest club in New York at the time.
Wow.
And I built,
this is a side of you that I don't know.
That's right.
Did you have like an annual membership out so you could go?
Well, I was hired as the primary carpenter, and I built my first fences on the pier that jutted 1,000 feet out onto the Hudson River.
Right, because you had to keep the drunks from falling off the pier, basically.
You got it. The club was like a fortified village. There was a perimeter fence that had to be 8 feet high to keep the people, the unwanteds out.
Right.
And then, so that part was kind of metal and barbed wire and stuff like that. On the inside,
good urban.
It was bamboo and grass and
tiki hut.
Painted kitschy, you know, South Pacific. Or
wait, what year was this?
1991.
Wait, I feel like I might have been there, but I don't remember.
The Amazon Village.
With your fake ID?
No, unfortunately, I didn't need ID then.
Well, the ratio, the club owner's policy was to let in one guy for three women.
Oh.
So you can imagine the crowd of men outside that place.
Yeah, right.
At 1 o'clock in the morning, it was...
Yeah. All trying to peer through your fence.
So those fences had to be very strong. And, you know, there's no soil on a pier. It's just a poured concrete slab. So we take set a post, you would take a jackhammer and jackhammer out a hole and then set the post.
Right.
And then pour concrete around it.
Right.
So it did keep the unwanted men out. Right.
Yes. Well, they were slipping extra money to the bouncers to get in, and the bouncers had a great deal going. Man, they got good
but
money.
You know, when a place is called Amazon Village, I mean, that alone like will attract a certain amount of men, won't it?
Yep.
Well, let's go back to the fence for a second. A little history on the fence. The word itself comes from the Middle English "fens," short for defense, which of course means defense. It's an archaic term meaning protection. It's the kind of fencing that you install that has a history that goes back to the beginnings of mankind, where among other uses it certainly was for defense. In the beginning, however, it was also an important factor in developing agriculture and the cultural understanding of private property, which is what you were just talking about, Al. In modern times, the kind of fence that you erect is really a security barrier to keep people or animals in or out. That's the definition of a fence today. It defines property lines, and it augments the appearance of a home or another building. It's a safety device for children. It's a shield for privacy, a barrier to noise, and so forth. But fence or fencing is also the name of a rock band or a middleman in the distribution of stolen goods.
Right.
It's a sport of swordsmanship in colleges and in the Olympic Games, fencing. It's an arguing technique. Stop fencing with me. It could be a breed of lizard or a town in Wisconsin.
Wow.
So there's some kind of fun facts about the word fence. And it is a word at the heart of a series of expressions from not taking sides to swinging a baseball bat as hard as you can. And it is a key word in Proverbs from sources as diverse as China, France, and England. Each of these meanings has colorful stories, including the kind of fence you install. And then, of course, there's the Robert Frost poem, Mending Wall. I did bring a copy, but I don't think I'm going to read it because I think it's much more interesting to talk about some stories of fencing.
Yeah, I want to hear Al's stories.
Yeah, but but remember, this is the line, the famous line about fences, where fences make good neighbors.
Right.
So we just finished a job, actually, with Al.
Last fall.
Yeah, where fences got kind of dicey. And we had kind of neighbors peering at us with slitted eyes from either side and from the back where this retaining wall had crumbled. So we really had three sides of defense to argue in the construction of
the
fence.
And the client didn't have a survey in this case.
Right.
Unfortunately. Although she said she did, but it never appeared, did it, Al?
That's right. It never appeared. So we had to do a lot of negotiating to establish where the fence ultimately was to go. And it went one time and went in the wrong place.
Yeah, because the existing fence was on an angle, and we were told to, you know,
follow that line.
Mm-hmm. Keep that line. So we installed, and then it turned out that wasn't the right thing because our client wanted the 2 inches towards the back of her property that we came in on. So we had to reset the entire fence.
Yep.
And it was a beautiful fence, I have to tell you, Al. It was It was such a nice fence.
What happens at projects at this level is that there's quite a bit of precision, if I do say so, and sophistication in the design. And so if these fences aren't perpendicular to each other or they're off by a few degrees in a certain way, they're visually, they don't have the same effect as if when they're in proper alignment.
Sure,
so
right.
Those 2 to 4 inches and that 3 or 4 degrees off the back of a house means something carried out 50 feet, 50 feet off the house to the back of the property.
Yeah, you're gonna see that actually visually as you look out the top, you know, penthouse or top up windows down into your space. You're going to see those inches very quickly.
And in this project, the fence was a very key design element as well. It wasn't just a barrier. It wasn't just for privacy. Probably more time was spent in the design of that fence than in any other element, wouldn't you say, Alice?
Yeah,
more
absolutely.
Than the landscape, more than the masonry.
It was all about geometry, and that's why that fence was so crucial to getting that layout perfect.
Yep.
So Al, let's talk about some different types of wood and materials for fence. What's your favorite?
I would say my favorite is Ipe. Uh-huh. You know, it's one of the more difficult ones to work with. But I know that 20 years after I install it, it's going to probably look just about as good as it did the day I put it in, except for the fact that it'll be gray, a little grayed out.
But it'll be as hard and stable as the day you put it in.
And Ipe is, essentially rot-proof. It's been declared by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to be, be able to bury it in the ground for 30 or 40 years.
Well, it has a Class A fire rating.
It does, just
like cement. So
the house could burn down and the fence will be standing there.
Yeah, exactly.
And just to clarify for those who don't know, Ipe, which is spelled I-P-E, is a tropical hardwood.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah. It's an exotic hardwood.
It's harvested in
Brazil.
Brazil. Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing with regard to the, you know, putting up a fence and the kind of perimeter lines is you can't assume that the edge of the house is actually the perimeter line.
Not at all.
That doesn't mean anything. And that's what part of our problem was in that case that we were talking about earlier, is that we were working off the neighboring wall, you know, where the house ended and then met with the other house, because we're talking about row houses here in New York City. And that was not technically their property line. In fact, their property line went over a little bit into the neighbor's yard.
Yep.
So that was a little awkward.
And even funnier is when you look at this back of the building, you see the paint color change and there's a line of paint color and should you assume that's the property line?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You should not.
Exactly.
Al often asks us, Al starts sentences with, should I assume?
Yep.
And we don't often like to answer that question.
Yeah.
So speaking of neighbors, one of the things that Alice and I try to insist with our clients, and I'm sure you do too, Alice, because invariably, neighbors that you haven't ever seen, you might have lived there 5 years, and you haven't seen them or had any dealings with them, as soon as you stick a spade in the ground or do any kind of work, they come out, literally, you know, to borrow a phrase, out of the woodwork, and then they suddenly care about everything. And we've had situations, and you have too, Al, where a fence is literally falling down, a decrepit old fence, and the client or, you know, their neighbor is wanting to put up a brand new beautiful fence, but they are insisting on, you know, us replacing or, you know, reinstalling their old horrible fence because it's theirs, you know.
Yeah.
So we try to stress to our clients,
but you're going to get a new one.
You're going to get a new one. But talk to your neighbors. It is not the responsibility of the contractor, whoever you hire,
to be negotiating
with your neighbors. Although many times we ultimately find ourselves in that situation and trying to be decent people and trying to smooth it over so we can also get our jobs done.
So we don't get a work order stopped.
Yeah. But you have to let your neighbors know that this work is being done. Whatever your relationship is with them, you shouldn't spring on them that you're taking down their fence or altering anything of theirs without their consent or understanding.
That's right. You don't want their dog coming over to your kiddie pool.
Right.
Because you took their fence down.
Right.
So you have to be prepared once you take it down to also put up a temporary barrier, all that.
And what
that
about,
sort of thing.
What about, this is always an awkward situation, as you're in the middle of construction and then you get, you know, 3 days worth of rain. So there's just this open site because you haven't yet, you've taken down the fence, but you haven't erected the new one. So it's just this free for all. And then there's always the like, oh my God, I hope there's not a burglar that's like crawling around back here, you know,
right.
And now there's no fence to protect. So you're just opening yourself up to such liability and legal issues.
Yeah, it's a traumatizing experience for some people, some owners too.
And for us sometimes yeah. too.
And you feel exposed, you know, I mean, yeah. if you're used to having, I think, what's the legal code in New York City, Al? Is it 5.5 feet?
Or 6 feet.
6 feet is the highest your fence should be legally, although many people do go beyond that and build higher. So if you're used to having sort of walls on all three sides and then all of a sudden you feel kind of exposed
mm-hmm. yeah,
and you
yep.
feel very open up, you know, most of the homes that we work on, you know, these people, you know, are doing quite well. So it's not like they're living next door to a crack house. Do you know what I mean? So, but suddenly they have this like psychological fear of their neighbors and the outside world. That fence is like a psychological protector, you know, like mm-hmm. a blanket around them, you know, so when that's down, they're always asking us, when's the fence going up? How much longer is it going to take, you know? And that's sometimes why we do that first, right? Get
yeah.
the fence done, rebuilt first, and then work on all the rest of the parts of the garden.
Yeah. And also, you know, we have to carry these fences through their houses a lot of times. So the demo, you know, you've got, what, 6 or 8 foot wide panels, 6 feet high.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a lot of schlepping and demoing right through their kitchen and dining room and what have you.
People are unaware of the volume of material that has to come in and out of their house just to do something like a fence.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, the fence really opens up Pandora's box into foundation walls that are underneath. And what's the stability of that? And how is it going to be anchored in? And I mean, it gets really, really intense.
One of the bigger issues is when, you know, your client has to put their fence, or their first fence was on the back of a neighbor's fence.
Yeah.
So there's only one line of posts
right.
down the middle, supposedly on the property line, often not.
Uh-huh.
And then each party has put their finish fence on those same set of posts.
Uh-huh.
So then the question is, do you have to set a whole new set of posts?
It's funny how some people will share posts and others
you're
won't.
Right,
isn't
exactly.
that hilarious? I think that's very
yeah.
telling as to who your client is, if they're willing to share or not.
In Brooklyn, they share a lot more than
yeah.
in Manhattan
yeah.
for some reason.
Yeah.
That's yeah, they're willing to lose a few inches. They don't want to touch their neighbor's fence. Or we worked in a situation a couple of years ago where the neighbor was glaring at us, and the client was a wonderful woman. She was very accommodating. She offered to put her neighbor up in a hotel for a month while they were doing the work. She was very, very nice, but this neighbor was just not, you know, a nice person.
Her torso was halfway out the window staring at us.
She was like a 70, 80-year-old woman, and her fence consisted of really, now this is telling of her too, pointy, unpeeled picket. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it looked like something out of Jamestown. And it probably had been there since then.
Since Jamestown. All right, on that note, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
In the wrong. Why are you Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., Chef Erica Wides hits the airwaves to become your own personal chef instructor. Chef Wides, along with esteemed guests from the culinary world, dissect topics that range from the complex to the deceptively simple, combining classic culinary know-how, personal experiences, and the occasional virtual history lesson. Why We Cook is a great listen for culinary vets and rookies alike. Again, that's Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, you're back listening to We Dig Plants, Heritage Radio Network. We are discussing fences and good neighbors with our great friend and carpenter colleague, Al Terry. That was a song by Phoenix called Fences. I'm sure you've all heard it a thousand times on the top 10 radio. Some information that we have today from Brooklyn Brownstoner, which is a blog here about Brooklyn real estate. It's where homeowners kind of go to kind of figure out what's going on in their neighborhood. And it's like a question and answer blog about building and construction. So there was a whole host of questions about exactly this topic, fences. And there's kind of a myth with regard to this topic that after 7 years, you can own the piece of property that is not determined on your survey if your neighbor's fence is encroaching.
Oh, so what you're saying is that if you build a fence that's not technically on your property,
right,
whatever that little bit is, you own it after 7 years?
Well, this is the myth. It's called adverse possession.
Oh, if your neighbor doesn't complain for 7 years saying, hey,
exactly,
your fence is on my property line, then you technically own it. And so there's some dispute about whether or not that's true.
Well, it's a state-by-state law.
Mm-hmm.
And in most places, it's longer than 7 years, actually. And Carmen, remember, we've hit up against this a few times. And Al, on this one project that we just finished in the fall, remember the neighbor kind of kept subtly mentioning this, and oh well, if the fence is here, then you know this sample or this survey that you're providing me, it doesn't matter because my fence was here, and even though it was on your client's property, so now I own that, you know, 3 extra inches. And we kept saying, you gotta like come up with some paperwork on that. Furthermore,
right,
we're just the contractors and we're not here to dispute that, you know,
mm-hmm,
take it to a judge. But I did some research and I found kind of what the law states on this Brooklyn Brownstoner website. And basically it says you must occupy the property openly and notoriously, which means that you must make no attempt to conceal the fact that you're occupying it. And you must do so adversely to the rights of the owner, which means that you must not have his permission to be there and not pay any rent. You must also pay all the taxes on the land. Now, can you imagine that in New York City when we're talking about 3 inches or 4 inches, the width of a post, you know, mm-hmm, being on either side of the property, and you're gonna allocate a sales or a tax to that? That's pretty
crazy.
First
of all, they're not gonna pay. They're not going to pay the tax on that little bit,
right,
to own it. So somebody put the fence in the wrong place, Al, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, you know, they started out by saying they wanted something for nothing, mm-hmm, by taking the property in the first place. Who said, you know, I wouldn't expect them to pay for it either.
Yeah. Well, this law was actually designed for abandoned properties.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you do have some, if you are lucky in New York City to have some open space behind you, and you take a few inches and, you know, and then a developer buys that piece of property and wants those inches back, that's where it's going to come, mm-hmm, into play.
The developer is going to pay attention to the survey, Al.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unlike the typical
survey
homeowner. Survey says, it's mine.
Yeah.
They're going to pay attention to every little bit. So the smartest thing that you can do is to pay for a survey, right, Al? I mean, like, it's worth paying an engineer or a surveyor before you go building anything. It's going to be a nominal part of the total budget of what you're going to do. Have a survey, and then you have a document that you can use.
Absolutely.
You know, so if
right.
a neighbor,
in a court of law, right?
And if a neighbor has a question saying, why are you building a fence over here? Well, my survey says that I own this space, so I can do it. Then it's up to them to prove that you don't.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. I mean, when these laws were written, you know, when these surveys were created, land was very different then, and things shift over time.
It wasn't $1,000 a square foot.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it does matter. Alice and I always talk about this, Al, that, you know, whenever we go visit a site and it looks like it's been abandoned, you know, all that square footage in the back, 400 square feet or 500 or 600, that's like the typical size. And I think to myself, wow, if that was inside your apartment, you would not right. leave it in that trashy condition. You would fix it. You would use it. It would be usable space. And yet when we're talking about the outside, maybe it's because it's a function of the Northeast and they think they can only use it 6 months out of the year. But suddenly it doesn't have the same value, and they're not often as willing to put as much dollars into per square foot that they would indoors.
Sure.
You exactly. know, so sometimes yeah. there's a little bit of that push and pull
yeah.
about making, helping them understand the value of that outdoor space that they have.
I think that's changing though. I mean, I think there's a positive trend in that area where people are much more conscious of the improvement in the quality of their life if they keep their outdoor space, you know, at a high standard.
Right. So tell us some of the fence kind of favorites, your fence favorites.
Yeah, strange stories that you've encountered while fencing
well,
people in.
You know, it's most of it is what we've gone over in many respects. I mean, we have set it's basically the antagonism between neighbors, and this is the focal point. It's almost like the single child between two divorced parents or something like that, you know, where
yeah.
it becomes a heated issue. And you know, we've been involved with projects in which we got to the point we had to have the survey done, and then we had to move a fence 3 or 4 inches just
yeah.
to please the new neighbor who moved in. Not an old timer in the neighborhood. You know, the old timers tend to respect each other and
have conversations with
right,
each other.
Exactly.
Now it's just mine.
Right. And yeah. people come in and they're spending, you know, not $200,000 for the brownstone. They're spending $1.2 million. And so every inch to them means it's just, you know.
Right. Or 20 million, as in some of our
oh, yeah.
clients,
yeah.
you know?
I love the lawyer clients too, Al. Don't you love that?
Oh, well, that's an unwritten rule in construction. Don't work for an attorney. Yeah. Never work for an attorney.
The red line.
they're the only ones that question our contracts. Like, or yeah. perhaps they're the only ones that actually read them.
I had one of my clients write a contract for me once. You know,
yeah,
I just
right.
used that as a boilerplate for yeah. the next 10 years.
Thank you very much.
I took out, it was totally in his favor, but I over the years, those clauses dropped off.
Yeah, right. right. So have you, you've built some over-the-top things. Tell us about some of the designs that you've erected.
Well, gee, I mean, a lot of the, you know, the very sophisticated and super high-end fencing we've done has been on the rooftops of buildings in,
right.
in New York City, certainly. You know, the Park Avenue and the what have you. You know, our movie star clients are often concerned about visibility from afar.
Right.
So they have to figure out a way to do better than the 6-foot fence rule.
Uh-huh.
And they often will, you know.
Topper. Put a topper on it.
There's a topper.
Uh-huh.
And also there's the softscape solution, which mm-hmm. is more in your domain.
Uh-huh.
Which is to plant some pretty densely packed coniferous trees or fir trees or pine trees in a heavy planter. Literally, they make, I've seen them make almost an outdoor cubicle.
Yeah.
A hedge. And it's been, you know, these are famous people. They don't want, you know,
paparazzi,
those shots right. showing up in
OK magazines. Yeah. So you're all of a sudden your like code 6-foot fence can be eked with a topper another foot, so you've got 7 feet, and then depending on what you plant in front of it, you could really get 9-10 feet
yeah,
of
people,
privacy.
Bamboo. People are using yeah. bamboo. That's a yeah. one way to do it. So
the other thing that I always found really funny is if the rule is 6 feet, right, top to bottom, but where does the bottom start? You know,
yeah.
Like I always find that like
we've had those questions
loophole yeah. of like, but I've got this retaining wall that's 3 feet, so I can put a 6 foot fence on top of that.
Yep.
And how people get creative.
Or the property sloped, so on the yeah. east side the fence is up, could be 18 inches higher than the west side. So
yeah.
And why is 6 feet the limit, Al, just for people's edification?
That is a very good question.
You know, here's the reason. That's what the firemen can jump over easily.
Oh, yeah?
It's a fire rule, and it's supposed to be what they can jump over easily.
You know, that's
what I heard.
That's, you know, I've heard that, what happens on the rooftops of buildings is that when you have a fence, you need to have a gate.
Right.
Between you know, the general areas. And that gate has to be 3 feet wide and have 7 foot tall clearance.
Uh-huh.
And that's so a fireman in his full gear can run through that gate.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you know, he has a barrier to get through. So
yeah, anyway, but nobody puts gates on their fences, Al, right? I mean, that's...
On
roofs, you do.
Rooftops.
No, but at grade, it's pretty...
There's some of the older houses, or of course, they're all old houses, but some of our clients, Carmen, have gates that go through so that the backyards are technically all open. We've seen that.
Yeah, it's rarer now, though.
It's
like
rare.
You were saying, the old timers, like in Park Slope and stuff, often had gates, or they had low fences, and then you know, gates where their children or they could just mingle with their neighbors easily. But now,
it is a fire rule. Actually, in my building, all of the buildings in the back, there's a fence.
Oh,
like that you can go through. You can
a
go,
gate.
Yeah, you or the fence is very low,
right?
Because they're old, but you can technically go. Basically all down our block
mm-hmm.
on the inside.
Well, I notice a trend. Of course, there's the good old chain link fence, right? That those are the fences that we're usually replacing many times, Al,
yep.
with nice wood fences. And I noticed a trend in my neighborhood. When I was a kid, most of the fences were 3 feet high. So you could see your neighbor
yep.
and say hi to them.
Right.
But over the years, as time has passed, the fences have gotten higher and mm-hmm. more opaque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's no sense of community anymore. It's
so
just
people
privacy.
Don't, yeah. People are in their backyards using their space, but they don't many. And we notice this too when we're designing. They'll say, you know, I don't want to be obnoxious, but I don't want my neighbors looking at me while I'm yeah. eating dinner. And I don't want to see them.
Because
you know?
They don't eat dinner. And
like they right. don't, they say that when we're having the preliminary discussions about how do you want to use the space, who's going to use the space, and when we're thinking about designing it, they'll say, I just, you know, we always bring up the subject of fences because invariably there is a fence. It's usually decrepit and falling down, and that's usually a big part of the budget when
yep.
you have to enclose three sides. So we say, how do you want to handle the fence? Oh, I don't want to see my neighbor. I mean, I don't want to make a fortress, but I don't want to see them. You know?
Yeah.
And that's a very common comment,
yep.
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that if the fence, I'm 6'2", so when there's a fence that's only 6 foot tall, I know that I can almost look over it and see the tops of the guy's head next door.
Yeah.
So when I have clients who are like my height or more,
uh-huh.
I mention that to them and just to sell them the last 6 inches on the top of their fence so they
yeah.
can have the privacy that they want. I mentioned that that's important.
Yeah. And then there's, of course, the iron fence, you know, like, and now designers and architects are really designing very elaborate wood and iron combo fences. Mm. So fences are really becoming big, big ticket items in the overall cost
yeah.
of
but,
a garden.
But I have to say, there's nothing like a wood fence, you know, I mean, there's now there I'm seeing all kinds of weird aluminum and all kinds of things that just to me look like ugly, you know, and not
foreboding.
Know, yeah, foreboding
yeah.
and
yeah.
and just not, it just feels like a park.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? And a wood fence to me is like the quintessential American, the picket fence, the split rail. It's just very homey.
Can you imagine a split rail in New York City
nope.
in the backyard?
Hey, no, but they're putting one at the old stone house.
Well, that's a historic site.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But no, I mean,
yeah,
there we saw some brownstones where people had split rail, very open.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. that keeps
know.
The horses in.
But no one has ever asked us to. No one has ever asked us now to say, "Hey, you know what? I'd really like is a split rail fence that my neighbor can just hop over, you know,
yeehaw, yeah.
and pick my tomatoes." No, people are very like,
yeah,
you know,
proprietary.
Well, like you said, it's $1,000 a square foot, so you know, and they've worked very hard for it, so they're gonna, you know, build themselves in and only go out when they need to. Yes. <you know?
laughs> In the dark, mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, Al, for joining us. Unfortunately, we're out of time today. Fences make good neighbors was our topic. If you'd like to see some of Al Terry's work, Al, what's your website?
It's www.alterrydesign.com. That's all one word.
Alterrydesign.com.
And we'll put a link to your website on our Facebook fan page.
So thanks for joining us. If you'd like to hear an archive, you can go to the website. You can also listen to it on iTunes. Thanks to our sponsor, Whole Foods. Thanks to Jack Inslee for engineering and producing. And have a great day. Happy gardening.
And fence making.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network.